Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Welcome to Sawbones, Marital Tour of Misguided Medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
It's the holiday season, hickory dip and hickory dock. Don't forget to hang up your smock, it'll become around the chimney now. Holiday season.
That was beautiful.
Thank you, Sid. I was hoping you would hop in and interrupt me there, but you just left me enough rope to hang myself with.
Yeah, no, If you want to jump in with it like that, I'm going to let you keep going.
It's the holiday season.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
I'm excited.
Cup full of cheer?
Yeah. Or something.
Something.
I mean, does cheer have, is it alcoholic?
Yeah, cheer's alcoholic. I don't think there's any question about that. Milk of Human Kindness is absolutely alcoholic.
So cheer is, okay, then I am all for a cup
Wassailing,
of good cheer.
I think wassail is alcoholic. I think it's all pretty much alcoholic.
That is not what our episode's about today, but yes, I agree with that about the holidays.
I'm getting close to being done on my shopping. I just got a few more stray items to get. We tend to give gifts as a pair these days.
That's true. But you're still ahead of me because I still have to get gifts for you. So.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well,
we're
getting there. You know, we're just 10 days out.
What do you get for the guy who has everything?
You've already given me the greatest gift and your love and our daughter.
Aww. That's sweet.
But yeah, I'm good. I feel confident about my gifts this year. I feel good.
So you're feeling really good about them.
I feel really good.
Yeah. I think they're like the best gifts
Probably
ever.
The best gifts ever.
Well, you would be wrong.
Well, I'm pretty sure.
Nope. They are not the best gifts that anybody's giving this holiday season.
Okay.
I'm going to give that award out to one of our listeners who wrote us an email. His name is Adam. And Adam.
What's this Adam guy got that I don't got?
Well, it's more what he doesn't got. Soon, it's one less kidney because he's giving a kidney to a family member.
Okay, that's pretty good. Okay, Adam, you got me beat on that front.
I think organ donation, that's probably the best.
I'm holding on to these bad boys.
Give somebody.
I need both these bad boys. Keep me running at optimal performance.
For all those horse's necks you keep drinking down this holiday season.
I need doubles. I need two of them.
That's a beverage. For those of you who don't know,
it's classic. It's great.
Brandy. Justin doesn't eat horses' necks.
Brandy, bitters, and ginger ale. It's delicious. Oh, so crisp. Anyway, wow, that's amazing. Giving a kidney to somebody.
Yes, absolutely. And he was interested in the history of organ transplant. And I thought, you know, if he's giving the gift of one of his own organs, the least I could do is give him the gift of a podcast about organ transplantation.
I think that that's more than fair. I think we may even be getting the better end of that deal.
Definitely we are. I don't think that this is equal to that. But anyway, thank you, Adam. Thank you for the topic. And thank you for donating a kidney because that's awesome.
So, Sydney, how did we start switching organs around?
Well, this is, as you may imagine, a fairly newer concept.
Is it a newer concept or is it a newer thing that we actually did without people dying?
Okay, so it's a newer thing that we can do successfully.
Right, okay.
There was a...
It seems like it's pretty early on, so it'd be like, you know what? I see those weird bags that he has in his body. I know I need X amount of bags in my body to push the liquids around and the humors and what have you. Maybe I could put one of his bags into my body.
Well, yes. I mean, that is true. But in order to do that, you would have to know which of those bags was dysfunctional. So to know somebody needs a kidney, you have to know they're in kidney failure.
Oh, okay. That's a good point. Yeah.
You know. But you are right in the sense that the concept that if one of the squishy structures in your body seem to be going afoul, that you could replace it with somebody else's is not new. The ancient Greeks were said to have attempted organ transplantation, but a lot of this is probably just myth. Mm-hmm. I don't think that anyone actually did this, just simply because the surgical techniques wouldn't even been in place. So even if you could understand, like, this person needs a kidney, you only need one kidney, because that was the other step, right? Like, if you're going to take an organ from somebody, you'd have to understand they didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess you could take it from a dead person.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to know how to put it in there and make it work.
And they were at least get them infected in the process.
Exactly. And there was no anesthesia. So we've talked about this before. There weren't a ton of surgeries before we could knock people out during surgeries.
Yeah.
There was a story of an ancient Chinese physician, Pian Chiao, who exchanged hearts between two men. One man, and this is how he's described, has a strong spirit but a weak will. And the other man has a strong will, but a weak spirit. And so he exchanged their hearts in order to achieve balance.
Oh, but, well, okay. So that leaves us with one really fierce, sweet dude, and one dude who's just sort of like, I miss my strong will. How does he know where will is anyway?
Well, that's a good question. Which one was he trying to switch? The spirit or the will?
That's almost enough for me to file this one under unsubstantiated.
I think this myth is busted in the reading of it.
There might have been a strong-willed man and a weak-willed man, but at the end, we can all agree that there were just two dead guys.
With no hearts.
And a gaping hole, and a guy who realized he was in over his head and should probably pack his bags and get out of town ASAP.
I'm hoping was arrested?
Maybe.
Now, I'm not a fan of telling, you know, I like throwing shade on other doctors, but this may be a malpractice case. This would be a case where I'd have to say, look, I agree.
Listen, I applaud your enthusiasm and your zeal, but I think you made a misstep somewhere along
the way. I'm going to say that didn't happen. Just like there was a story of two saints, Damien and Cosmas, who were credited with replacing Justinian the deacon, his leg became gangrenous, and so there was an Ethiopian man who had died, and so they took his healthy leg and attached it to Justinian. But then when you go into like the story, like the saints had been dead for a long time, so then there's a theory that they were from beyond the grave coaching somebody else to do it.
So we're starting to get some supernatural elements in there.
It gets a little sketchy. So yeah. I'm going to say it didn't happen.
I'm going to put that one under busted.
I think the first actual occurrence of some sort of transplant was probably a skin graft. And I think that counts.
That makes sense. Sure. Yeah. Skin's the biggest organ, right?
There you go. So we're going to talk about skin graft first. And this probably for the first time happened in India in the 2nd century BC by Sushustra, who was an Indian physician. And it was an allograft. Do you know what that means?
Nose?
No.
Related?
You're reading ahead and trying to sound smart and you got it wrong.
Dang it. You're right. You're right. No, I don't know.
It was from the donor's own body.
Okay.
Which is probably why it worked.
And what body part was it from?
What he did is he took skin from the forehead and stretched it down over the nose.
See, I knew it was nose related. I had a sense that it was related to the nose somehow. It was,
somehow, magically.
Somehow, I thought.
I mean, it's good that you can read still.
Yeah, I haven't lost that essential skill.
It was for a nose reconstruction. I believe the patient had lost their nose. I think it was a punishment at the time. You could get your nose cut off, it happened in battle. I don't remember which one. It was a traumatic nose removal.
As opposed to sort of a cash nose removal?
Well, as opposed
NBD,
to...
NBD, man, didn't smell that much stuff anyway.
Okay.
Never liked it.
We're going to talk a lot about syphilis destroying noses, so now you're going to feel silly.
I doubtful, but go on.
It was some sort of traumatic nasal amputation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he reconstructed it by stretching the skin down from the forehead, but leaving it still attached there so you would still have blood supply.
Perfect. Okay. Gotcha.
He also performed skin grafts by removing a strip of skin from your butt and putting it on your face.
Nice.
You were a
butthead.
Butt face.
Butt face.
Forever.
I'm pretty impressed that we understood blood supply, though. That's pretty good.
It's interesting because that's one of the keys to, you know, organ transplantation in general, but definitely skin grafting, which wouldn't necessarily be easy to figure out if you didn't know that stuff yet.
Right.
But it seems to have been figured out pretty quickly. That and the way to do the surgery were not the big barriers. So there are three things to consider, right?
Right.
We need to get the organ from somebody or the tissue. So either, you know, like a skin graft, it could be from the person, but if it's a kidney, obviously it's got to be from somebody else. Mm-hmm. You've got to get it into the host correctly. So you got things like blood supply that you're considering and how to hook it up, so to speak.
Get it all plugged
in. Like a new VCR.
Get the HDMI cord just the right place.
Exactly. And there's the... Now, when you plug things into TVs...
Yes.
Do you still use like the red and the yellow and the white cords?
It's called RCA. There aren't a lot of... not a lot of devices use that still.
Because the last time I think I hooked something up, it was with something.
I can never remember if that's component or composite. I think that's composite. And then the red, blue, green, white, red, is component.
And yellow. There's a yellow one too, right?
Well, no, not if you're doing red, green, and blue, because that's for HD. But most people just, HDMI is what you see usually now.
So basically organs come with HDMI cords and basically, you got to make sure you get them in the right colored little holes in the body.
Now remember, just there's no colors with the HDMI cord, just the one black cord. I don't think bodies can use HDMI even.
We're not equipped for that.
No, we're not equipped for that. We're two last gen.
That'll be next gen. We're still cathode ray tube bodies. So you got to get it in there correctly. Obviously, we don't know how. And then the final thing, which took us the longest to figure out, was you got to prevent rejection. So if you're taking an organ from one person...
If you figure that another, out, please tell middle school me, because I did not do well with it.
Is that your Debbie Downer moment? So, like I said, we had the skills to do the surgery pretty early. And the attempts to reconstruct blood supply, as you noted... We figured that out pretty quickly.
That's good. But that's plumbing, right? I mean, that's like, they're mm-hmm. small pipes, but still the idea is there.
And there were enough people, even though we talked about this in the episode about cadavers and mm-hmm. the resurrectionists and all that, mm-hmm. that it, even though there were large swaths of history where it wasn't okay to dissect people, everybody totally was.
All the time.
They were dissecting people. So they were figuring this stuff out. And as far as the supply of organs, well, we didn't know that it was a problem to take them from dead bodies at the time. So, as we have talked about before, we have a long history of taking things from dead people. So finding a donor wasn't really the problem.
Yeah.
The big problem was that we just didn't understand rejection. And so this is why, even though way, way back we understood this concept, it isn't until the 1900s that we really succeed in doing it. Hmm. So, the first transplant that was successful is in 1905 in what is now the Czech Republic, and it was a cornea transplant.
Wow, that seems super delicate. Of all the things you would... I mean, especially something like the heart. That seems pretty easy to figure out, but I guess a heart's maybe harder... Because it dies quicker or something. Like, maybe a liver or a kidney? Those just seem like bags.
Well, you've also got to consider the patient. Somebody, you know, in order to do a transplant, you know, you take something out, you put something in.
Right.
When you're putting in a cornea, your patient's not in jeopardy the whole time.
Okay.
If you're trying to reconstruct a heart valve and you do it wrong or you take too long.
If you're still trying to figure this out. You might as well try something that's not going to kill you.
Right.
If it goes sideways.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, that's pretty dicey because, I mean, in order to, you know, at the time, for all they knew, to put in a new liver, you have to take the old liver out. And so then you're kind of on the clock.
You do have to take the old liver out, right? You can't just leave it in there and work around it.
What's interesting, just to skip ahead a little bit, but when you're doing a kidney transplant, you actually don't have to take the bad kidney out.
What do you do with it?
The new kidney goes in a different place. It goes in a different location in the pelvis.
How could that be?
It just it works better that way. The way that it hooks up to the blood supply
in my body, where a kidney
there is a place where a kidney would fit, and we figured out that because it's unnecessary at that point to take the bad kidney. It's not going to do anything. It's just there.
I'm not going
to say there aren't situations where it is you're supposed to remove a kidney if certain diseases, blah blah blah. But for the most part, if you just your renal failure, you need a new kidney, you can just kind of pop it in.
That's wild.
Yeah,
that's wild.
It is
I'd insist that they take it. I don't. It's hard enough to lose weight. Like, I don't need an extra kidney in there.
We've had this debate before, actually, as a medical team, when surgeons were planning on removing organs, and we've asked, "Why are you removing it?" And they've said, "Because it doesn't work." And it's like, well, you don't have to remove it.
Oh, I am.
It's a very surgical solution. You can tell that I'm in the medical end and not the surgical end of the spectrum because
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead with what you're saying. I just don't want the kidney in there. Get that back kid out.
So, anyway, the corneal transplant. There had been the first.
Won't it rot? Won't it rot in there?
The kidney? No. Why would it rot?
Because don't you have to disconnect it?
Why do you have to disconnect? No. Doesn't work.
Don't you have to unplug it?
No.
Where are you hooking the new kidney up
to? It's safe, and it's just a different place in the vascular.
I think you're trolling me. I think this is a con.
Look up pictures of kidney transplants.
Hey, you know I'm good.
If you look
it's the holidays. I'm all right.
Anyway, there had been a corneal transplant 68 years before this one, but it was in a gazelle, so I guess we don't count it.
Nah, those are barely people.
I don't know. But that gazelle could see so well.
Did we transplant that from a human?
No.
Okay.
It was from a gazelle.
Okay.
As far as I know, there was no human involved.
It was probably gazelle to gazelle, right?
It was just practicing.
Right.
Like, poor gazelles. Well, how do you choose a gazelle?
You find the one that seems to be tripping a lot and say he needs a new cornea.
No, I mean, of all animals. Aren't they fast? Don't you have to catch them?
They're fast, but that makes visual problems very easy to spot. You see the one who's, kind of taking his time. Well, that rock feels loose.
You're the one who keeps taking off running and smashing into trees.
Right, that guy needs a new cornea.
So I guess that would be considered a tissue transplant. The first kind of organ transplant, so to speak, was part of a thyroid. Again, it wasn't a whole thyroid, but part of it was transplanted in 1883. And this was because the Swiss physician who discovered a lot about thyroid disease, who understood, I think he won a Nobel Prize, Coker, I believe, who won a Nobel Prize for thyroid disease issues, understood that a goiter was bad. So, goiter is when your thyroid gland gets all big right there in the front of your throat.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Adam's apple. Right? Is it the Adam's apple?
No. But, it's a thyroid. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. But same area. Yes.
Okay.
Same area.
Good. Fine.
No, you're fine. So, he removed thyroids that had goiters. So, he would remove the whole gland.
Okay.
But once the whole thyroid gland is gone, you get hypothyroidism because you don't make thyroid hormone anymore.
Because you need that.
And so, yeah, exactly. And he would recognize that every time he did this, these people would develop this syndrome that we now know as hypothyroidism. So he would put some thyroid tissue back in people and it would fix it.
From where?
I don't know. I don't know where he got it. I read that he put it back in. I don't know if he would once he figured it out, he could take the thyroid out and then remove just a little bit of the tissue and then put it back in. You know what I mean?
Okay. Is that a transplant, though, really, if it's from the same person?
Yeah.
So, wait.
We talked about skin grafting from the same person.
So, wait. That's the first organ transplant.
So to speak.
And that's 1883.
Yes.
So, how was the first human transplant in 1905?
Well, I think it was because it wasn't the whole organ.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. Gotcha.
If you look at a timeline, most people cite 1905 as the big breakthrough.
Gotcha.
It wasn't a whole thing. It's just a little bit of the thyroid tissue. And then from here on, we have in the early 1900s, everybody's crazy for transplantation. A lot of the stuff they're doing is really practice. They understand the concept, but they don't know how to do it. So a lot of the transplants that were going on early on were like dog transplants.
Dog to dog.
Dog to dog.
Not dog to human.
That was attempted.
Oh, man.
A lot of it, people thought it was just, well, once we figure out how to do the surgery, there was no idea, we didn't understand blood types yet. So we certainly didn't understand tissue matches.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, we figure out how to put a kidney in somebody, how to put an ovary, a pancreas, whatever, in somebody. Once we know how to do the surgery, what else is there to figure out? You just right. do it and do it as fast as you can so they don't bleed to death.
Yeah.
And they tried it with kidneys, with adrenal glands, with ovaries, with testicles, with pancreas. They started doing transplantation of blood vessels, which improved their understanding of how to, you know, fix blood supply to the organs. They tried at one point to put rabbit kidneys into a patient.
No dice?
No.
It worked,
they put them in there and they hooked them up, but...
They're in there for sure.
But then they rejected them.
And I'm assuming that happened by the patient saying, no, thank you. These really aren't working out for me. I'd prefer you take them out now.
I mean, that would be better if that was how
it
happened.
Is that how rejection works?
Well, since it's Christmas, we'll say that's the kind of rejection.
Nice.
And then he went on his merry way without his rabbit kidneys.
Perfect.
But they really weren't having much success. So the one area that was expanding was skin transplantation, and mainly because they were taking skin graft off of a person and putting back on to the same person somewhere else. So you're kind of foregoing the problem of rejection. And this is when I mentioned that syphilis would play a big role.
Why is that?
Because syphilis, end-stage syphilis, can destroy the nose, the nasal tissue. And so you would get these really deformed, and it was a mark that you were, you know, a person who had syphilis. Like, everybody would know your nose was deformed and everybody would talk about you.
Get away from that guy.
That person has syphilis.
That's syphilis, Steve.
So trying to reconstruct syphilitic noses was definitely something you'd want done.
So hot right then.
Right. And this was actually, we've talked about that show, The Nick, before.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch it, then you've seen this. One of the surgeries they would do is they would take a flap of skin from like your inner arm and cut it partially off and then attach it to your face.
You're kidding.
And then you would have to walk around with your arm kind of draped over your head and the skin attached from your arm to your nose.
Oh, that's brutal.
While it grew, because they understood blood supply, right? So they knew that just taking a big hunk of skin off the arm and slapping it on the face wouldn't work. So they waited until the graft like took to the skin of the face. And this would take weeks, months. That you'd walk around with your arm.
Your nose has to be jacked.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That hurts me just thinking about. Oh, that's so grody.
And it's from your inner arm.
So grody. Ugh. You look like a deodorant commercial 24 hours a day. Brutal.
I thought this was interesting. They were experimenting with different kinds of skin grafts. And one was known as a split graft. And it was purely because the tools they used, they derived from the ones they used for splitting leather in a harness shop.
Wow.
Sounded a little intense.
Yeah, a little brutal.
Like, hey, you know what this would be great for?
Get away from
Buffalo Bill. That's awesome.
That's nice. I'll put some lotion on my skin. So what came next, Sydney?
Well, I'm going to tell you that real quick, Justin. But before we hit there, let's head down to the billing department real quick.
Let's go.
So there's a lot of stuff that medical TV shows can get wrong, but I know one of the most disappointing things for me when I started practicing is how uncomfortable conventional scrubs can be. They don't necessarily fit all body shapes really well, and they're scratchy, and that's until I found Figs. So our shifts in the hospital can be really long or in the office, and you need scrubs that feel good, that fit you well, and they're going to last all day long. Figs make scrubs for the medical professionals of today. They're not like a paper bag. They're not itchy. They feel great. They're so soft and comfortable. They're form-fitting. They're made for the kind of work that we actually do, where we're up and down, we're on our feet. Sometimes I'm sitting on the exam room floor checking out somebody's toenails, and I need to be comfortable while I'm doing it. They're antimicrobial, so you know that you're going to be protected. You can wash them every time you wear them, which is super important. I wash my scrubs, obviously, every day that I wear them. And they look good, so you can look like those cute TV docs and nurses that made us go into medicine in the first place. You can check out tops like the Katarina and the Cade pants. It's an easy, relaxed fit, and then so many cargo pockets, which I can tell you that's the main thing we need, are pockets for our pens, pockets for our notebooks, pockets for my Narcan, pockets for everything. I love figs. They are so comfortable. And with the work that I do, kind of unconventional out in the street medicine, I need something that feels good all day long. With back to school season upon us, it's the perfect time to stock up with some fresh outfits for the year. And Figs just dropped a brand new collection of limited edition styles and accessories. If you're in healthcare or if you're shopping for someone who is, you can get 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com. Code FIGSRX, FIGSRX.
I have really enjoyed experimenting with fashion, thanks to Quince. Now, I know that that sounds wild coming from me, Justin McElroy, a podcaster. Why, Justin, are you even wearing clothes? I hear you. But when I want to try a new look, what I love about Quince is they have a lot of different clothing items that are at a great price and are really well made. So if you want to try something, you're not sure if it's like, is this going to be the right fit for me? I don't know. Try it out with Quince. There's craftsmanship that you see in every detail of these clothes. I've bought several, like a pair of shorts I love, a pair of pants I wear literally every day. I mean, nearly every day, not literally every day. You know what I mean? Because there's some days you're just like, you can't. But I've been so happy with the pieces that we have gotten from Quince. And also there's a really wide variety of stuff. You know, there's silk tops, skirts for dressing up, denim for everyday wear. I don't mention a lot of the specific items because honestly, you shouldn't trust me about that part of it if it's outside my specific range of clothes for my body. But I will say this, for my body, Quince does right. It sounds weird now that I say it like that. Find gifts so good you'll want to keep them with Quince. Go to quince.com/sawbones for free shipping on your order. 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/sawbones to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sawbones.
All right, Sid. So how did we overcome the next hurdle in this? Because obviously we still had miles to go on transplants.
Exactly. So over the next, and like I said, a lot of this was done from, you know, I said the first transplant was 1905. And when we get to some really successful stuff, it's in the 1950s.
So relatively recently that we've sort of pieced all this together.
Exactly. And that's as we began to understand rejection was a big thing. The idea that there was something inherent to our body that recognized foreign tissue and would attack it unless sometimes it matched. And we still, you know, we were trying to piece together why did it match sometimes and why didn't it. The other things that also played a role were the development of kidney dialysis, for one, because I mean, part of this is if somebody's organ is failing, you have to keep them alive long enough to get the transplant to them. And right. So before we developed things like kidney dialysis or later like the heart lung machine, how were we able to keep people alive without these organs?
Yeah.
Or preserve the organ until we could get it in the person. And transportation played a role here too.
Couldn't get the organ to the person fast enough.
Before the organ died, so to speak.
Right.
So anyway, in 1954, the first successful kidney transplant was performed. And and successful, I mean that both people lived afterwards.
How do we pull it off?
They were twins, identical twins.
Oh, and to this day, the only people that can get organ transplants are twins. And that's going to do it for us.
Nope, wait, nope.
Here on this episode of Sawbones. No, congratulations, twins.
Nope, that's not true.
Great news for twins on the new episode of Sawbones.
That is not true.
Tumblr it.
I mean, certainly that makes it easier, but no. We figured out from the fact that that was successful that immunosuppression is necessary in order to transplant organs that aren't in identical twins. So basically, we got to stop your immune system from attacking the foreign organ. Initially, we did this with like radiation, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, not great.
Fry their immune system in order to not attack the organ, which was good that they didn't attack the organ, but bad with all the side effects of radiation. Eventually, we understood that matching, you could find people who had the same sort of markers and tissue markers and things, and that we could match organ to organ to reduce the rejection. And then we could also use steroids, were a big breakthrough to reduce the immune response to the organ.
Do you know?
And then as the years go on, there were more complicated immunosuppressants.
Do you know how matching works? Do you know, I mean, do you personally, I know that's not really your field, but.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is just taking, like, your blood cells and like running them through, looking for different markers on their surfaces.
They just match.
And just, you know, coming up with like a profile of I don't know, different like proteins on the surface of your cells.
Makes sense.
That's basically all it is. But I don't know. I mean, it's different organ to organ and depending on, you know, what you're transplanting and that kind of thing. It's the same idea as blood matching, only much more, many more factors you have to control for. After that, after we figured out that part of it, it was followed by a pancreatic transplant, liver transplant, heart transplant. This is all in the 60s. We figured all this out.
Nice.
And by the 80s, we transplanted lungs.
That's amazing that that happened in my lifetime. That's wild.
It is. It is wild because, you know, this was a huge life-saving breakthrough. And the fact that we ever figured out that the fact that we ever figured out rejection is still kind of amazing to me.
Yeah. Thanks, twins.
Now, this led to a lot of ethical issues. So you can take an organ, like a paired organ, like a kidney from a living, willing donor. But when can you from the deceased? We began to understand that you couldn't take kidneys out of somebody who'd been dead for, you know, 3 weeks.
Right.
And transplant them. So when is it okay to take it from somebody?
Which is more a practical question than an ethical one, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's also brought in the whole idea of like brain death.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, which complicated things. And then also the buying and selling of organs became an issue at this point. So I think we've all heard the like horror stories of people waking up in bathtubs filled with ice and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so that began to enter into the question. And as a result, in some countries, they've actually legalized the sale of organs.
That's a cool way to inject your economy with some vim and vigor, I guess.
It's really, I read that there are some small communities where half of the population only has one kidney because they've already sold their other one.
In the land of people with one kidney, the man with two kidneys is king.
And you only get, I think this is kind of cheap, you only get like between $900 and $1,200 US
for
selling a kidney.
That miserable, terrible, horrifying, sad statistic kind of has me wondering if I should just buy one to have it.
Just to invest in kidneys?
Just in case.
I'm going to say no.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, where would we keep it?
No, we have no room.
We have no room. Our house is overflowing.
Diapers everywhere.
There's also a sad history of prisoners who were encouraged to donate organs in exchange for decreased sentencing, which of course is illegal. You can't do that. Prisoners are not allowed to agree to that, actually. Mm-hmm. We consider them, they're, you know, they'd be easily coerced, so they can't agree to a transplant.
Plus a lot of their organs is evil. They got evil inside them. They're cursed. It's a cursed liver you got. You got it from a man on death row. It's cursed. You don't want that bad liver. It's cursed.
It's like that. No, that's not that. Never mind.
Another great anecdote from Sawbones. Those hosts are always pulling out the best pop culture references.
Sorry, I had a reference and
like
it was wrong.
Like that hit movie. No, never mind. I was wrong.
But the first, you are right in that the first testicle transplant was...
Oh, thank God you can transplant testicles. I've been wondering this whole time, and finally I have my answer.
It was from a convicted murderer.
Evil ball.
And his sentence...
Evil ball.
And they actually had a kid, which is interesting, because it was like, I read the headline, it was like, first child born of transplanted testicle from convicted murderer.
That's the plot of the first Child's Play movie. Go watch it again. It's probably been a while.
His sentence was decreased, but it wasn't because of the transplant. It was already going to be, but they kind of insinuated to him. They lied to him and told him that it was related to get him to donate.
That's an awkward conversation afterwards. How are you going through those files?
Some people got in trouble. And let me just say on a side note, because we kind of brushed over this, but as far as the selling of organs, so in the U.S., we consider that, well, one, illegal and two, unethical. Mm-hmm. But there are some people who write papers in support saying that because it would take such a small percentage of the population to sell their kidneys to eliminate the transplant waiting list.
Mm.
And so then there's this argument. Is it wrong?
That's a tough one. I think I leave that to smarter people than myself. I don't know.
It's a very dicey question.
Yeah.
You've got needy people on both sides of this.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we go into the 2000s, we are doing all kinds of transplants, arms, legs, faces. I think everybody remembers that. The first face transplant was a big deal in the news. There was a penis transplant done. In 1998, the first hand transplant was done, and it actually, in 2001, they had it removed.
Why?
Psychological rejection.
It was evil.
Well,
cursed hand. I knew it.
Guy felt detached and removed from it, and like it wasn't part of him, and he couldn't handle it, and he wanted it off.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life.
It gets weirder. 2006, the first penis transplant was done. 2 weeks later, had it removed due to his wife's psychological rejection of the organ.
Where did they get it?
What do you?
Where did they get it?
Somebody who was dead. You know.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know this lady that well.
What do you think? But like somebody was alive, and they were like, "Well, I don't need this anymore.
I just need to confirm before." Like, I just don't know why we're casting dispersions on this woman for not wanting to have relations with Tim Burton's The Corpse Penis.
Well, I understand, and I can see where that would happen. I'm just saying that that's love.
Okay.
Can you imagine?
Smurl.
Honey, I need you to. I know that you had a, because he did, he had a tragic accident, lost part of his penis, got more penis, got new penis.
Additional penis.
Who knows? Maybe extra. I don't know. Second I don't know the. Chance, I don't know the comparative
second
length.
Second chance penis.
Second chance penis. And then she said, "Listen, if you really love me, you'll go back to being the man with no penis." And he did it.
That poor guy. How much do you think he was enjoying being able to pee without it looking like an exploding water balloon? Probably a lot, right? Oh. That poor fella.
It is sad, I know.
That's sad.
It's sad all around, but he decided, he opted out of the penis.
I'll take his own. There's got to be a few people who are like, I would have taken his penis. I could use one.
Maybe more, maybe a little extra.
Yeah, maybe, as long as you got it.
It's actually really complicated to do that, too. I'm sure that, you know, there was like a surgeon who was like, that took me hours.
I stared at this man's penis for the better part of a day.
I thought this was a really cool and made me feel good about humanity fact. In 2011, are you familiar with the concept of like an organ transplant chain? What that means?
Not really.
So a lot of the time you may have somebody in your family who needs a kidney, but none of the family members are matches or tissue matches. So you have willing donors, but they don't match the person who needs the kidney. So they start looking around for other people who may be a match for you, who maybe do need your kidney, and maybe they have a family member who would be a match for your loved one.
Oh, kind of wheeling and dealing.
Yeah. And so they set up these transplant chains by finding like people and family members and connecting everybody. And in 2011, the longest organ transplant chain was completed. It involved 60 people.
Wow.
30 kidneys were transplanted. That actually stretched into 2012, into 2011, into 2012. 17 hospitals, 11 states.
Pay it forward.
30 people got. I know. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Yeah. Folks, thank you so much for listening to our program, Sawbones. We hope you've had some fun listening to it, because I know we've had a lot of fun.
And thank you again, Adam, for your great topic and for doing something so selfless.
Yeah.
And we'll be thinking about you. Good luck. I hope everything goes well for you and your loved one.
Thanks to people tweeting about the show, like Amanda, Gabe Bullard, Shay, Haley Chrisman, Corey Dutson, Mina, Ticker, Professional Nerd, Jess Hill, Katie Winchester, Diana Leonard, Joey Rotolo, Jingle Benson, Ledormus, so many others. You're really the best. We're at Sawbones on Twitter, so it's not hard to remember. You just, you know, find us there and follow us and share and stuff. It's the best. Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines to open and close our show. Thanks to Scythe for sponsoring our program.
If you guys have topic suggestions, please email us.
We are doing a live show on this Sunday at 7 o'clock. The doors open at 7. Show starts at 8. Right here in Huntington, West Virginia, in our hometown. There are still tickets available. So if you want to go to bit.ly/CandleNightsLive, we're opening for my brother and me, which I'm also a part of, but we're going to do that show. It's going to be fun. Sid, do you want to say what the topic is? In case, Or do you want to keep it a super secret surprise?
I want to keep it a super secret surprise.
All right. Well, you'll have to find that out if you want to come out again. That show is Huntington City Hall. You can go to bit.ly/CandleNightsLive. I want to say thanks to the Maximum Fun Network for having us as a part of their vast family of programming. Want to recommend Bullseye this week. It's a pop culture discussion show. They had an amazing show with Chris Rock and John Cleese on a single episode. So that was really great and well worth a listen. You can find that at MaximumFun.org. Folks, I think that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Until next Tuesday, I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.